guys, welcome to Call Me Whenever podcast. I'm Chinaza.
And I'm Shivani.
And yep, that's our duo.
Y'all, I am super excited to have this guest on for this week's episode. Ashmi Sheth here is a candidate for U.S. Congress representing New York District 10. As a first-generation South Asian American, Ashmi attended Columbia University with her master's in public policy. She is an activist and public figure who has just recently announced her campaign on April 5th. Ashmi has worked her way up from affordable housing to regulating big banks at the Federal Reserve. Her campaign is driven by the idea that with a new generation of leadership, we can improve our quality of life, demand accountability that works, fight for justice, and secure a better future. Ashmi Sheth is running for Congress, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Ashmi,
thank you.
I know we just discussed this literally 2 minutes ago, but I have been calling you Ashmi for the past like month now. And that's guys, that's not how you pronounce it. Can you tell us how you pronounce your name?
Definitely. I usually tell people it's Ashmi, like Usher.
Got it.
Ashmi. I had a feeling you were gonna say that.
I'll remember that now, just because of the example.
Yeah.
Ashmi. See, I did it.
We have this whole idea of, like, you know, we're really trying to bring in millennials and Gen Z into the fold. And it's like, let me just go on the streets of New York and ask people with my name, like a sign with my name on it, and ask them, can you pronounce this for me? And then at the end of the video, just say how it's actually pronounced, because I think people mispronounce my name often. And, you know, that's something that it comes up every moment of campaigning. They want to know who you are. And my job entails talking to thousands of people, you know, hundreds every day. And the first thing I bring up is my name. And the next thing I hear is someone mispronouncing it. I'm like, well, this is the problem. We don't have representation. We don't have enough people that look like us, that have names like us in office. And so when the average age in the House, you know, and Senate is 60 years old, it's a different world that they're living in than the one that we are. And so I'm really working hard to make sure that we have a voice at the table.
That's such a great platform, Ashmi. And I was thinking, like, along with that name campaign, might as well just get Usher on the track.
I know. I've definitely thought about that. We'll see.
I love that.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Actually, though, it's kind of embarrassing because, like, I myself am an Indian American and I have been pronouncing it wrong. So I'm, like, just sitting in my chair, like, beating myself up a little bit because I'm just like, what? Like, I really messed that
up. But I mean, I think that just speaks to like a greater thing of, you know, even a lot of us that have grown up in different cultures, different ethnicities in the US, it's like we've had to code switch throughout our careers and our lives, and we've had to conform in so many ways that we don't even understand, that our first instinct isn't even like, well, how do we culturally pronounce this? And
yeah,
I mean, I've seen that in every space. It's not just the way we speak in the work space, it's the way we eat food, you know, like what food offerings are there at grocery stores, what do people consider healthy food. And we had a whole piece that was written about culturally competent healthy eating, where we're actually looking at neighborhoods and the foods that they are, their cultural foods that they should be able to have access to through, you know, EBTs or through affordable, yeah, just that whole thing.
That's a really good point, because I grew up eating Nigerian food. And that, I didn't really necessarily consider that healthy. I mean, not all Nigerian food is healthy, of course, but everything that we eat is made with fresh ingredients, fresh vegetables. The only reason why I put a clause there is because it also has palm oil, which is probably the worst oil for you. But besides the palm oil, everything else that we eat, from like the okra to the vegetables, it's all healthy eating. So like the way that you just incorporated cultural competent eating choice and food choices, I think, is just so spot on.
Yeah, most definitely. I think that also, like, what you said about, like, conforming to, like, how American society should be is so interesting, because, like, even, like, not to keep going back to the name thing, but, like, even names, foods, like, everything has become, and I always like to say Americanized, because it really has become just Americanized. And I think that applies to like Nigerian culture, Indian culture, Hispanic culture, most, you know, like most definitely we've been seeing in the past couple of years. So I think I want to start off with, like, you know, when I found out you announced your, you know, campaign on April 5th, I was like, I have to know, like who this woman is, like what is going on. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got to April 5th?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. It's something that I've been asked often. And I think it really starts with, you know, anyone, it starts with your story and your village. And I think that's what kind of carries you forward as well. So it always like starts there and it ends there. And for me, what I've done is when I was thinking about running, and I have been thinking about it for about a decade. So it's not wow. like, you know, a lot of people have said like, oh, is it the AOC effect? Like, is it Kamala Harris? Like, no, this is something that I think a lot of people have been thinking about pre-Trump as well, that we need new leadership. And it's very clear just from the community that I grew up in that we did not have representation. My mom and dad, you know, they arrived to the U.S. They had to move from state to state. My dad got laid off so many times. My mom had to like repeat college. She went through community college. And I just like grew up watching them struggle in a lot of ways. And I think what frustrated me was, yes, we have the immigrant struggle, but we also aren't necessarily marginalized in the ways that Anglo-American society may point us at. And so for me, it was really important to, even when you use the word Americanized, I mean, we are American as the person next door, right, that lives here. And so it's really important for us to keep ourselves in that narrative and say, like, this is the American story. And not just say this is the immigrant story, but it's also the American story. And so it goes in with our names, with our foods. You know, these are, Ashmi is an American name, you know, Indian food is American food. And we can make all of that more cohesive. But I think, as I was saying earlier, like, when I was growing up, it was very much focused on education, hard work, like, you know, persistence and everything. And so I watched my parents go through that. It gave me the strength to keep going. They are definitely, like, my family is my drive. But what's really beautiful about our story is, you know, yes, there were a lot of financial struggles, but there was also a strong sense of community. Like, my neighbors took care of me, and they were from all races, from all over the world. And they were there, and we would go after school and just stay at their homes, and they would be the ones that took care of us because we didn't have affordable childcare. You know, we had amazing teachers in Title I schools that would spend time with me and just take out time after school or let my mom know how the school system worked. And that's in the public library system and all these different tools that existed that I know do not exist for everybody. I think what really changed my life was when I went to a specialized test school. You know, I was the last person to get in. I was on the wait list, and my trajectory has just changed because of that, because I was around students who were motivated and from humble beginnings as well. So I think that was a huge, you know, it's a telling point when you have access to stuff like that, you do change as a person and you grow and you learn how to push yourself. And for me, I've always been, you know, civically engaged. I've volunteered excessively, like in every place, you know, politically, culturally, you know, environmentally. But I think it was always something that has been my calling and something that I've been building out. When I started my career, it was very focused on, can I understand these systems of power that my community has been excluded from forever? You know, when we got here, we don't even have a museum about our heritage. We don't have a strong identity. People just look at us and they say, oh, I love Indian food. Like, it's still at that point. It's so superficial. And so there's a lot of depth that still needs to be shown externally. And so for us, it was very much like, how do we represent that voice and value? And that's just what I've been working on for over a decade. And that's what I'm going to continue doing, is making sure that we have that space to represent ourselves politically.
That's so wonderful, Ashmi. And to that point that you said about the fact that we're all American and even our culture shares in the American tradition and American heritage, I think that point you made is actually, while it is common sense to some of us, is actually radical to others, because I think that's so true. Even for me, like, I consider myself a Nigerian American, but it's difficult for me to also just take ownership of American and like identify as American fully. Like, it's always hyphenated, like as if there's some kind of second class citizenship that I belong to because I'm also associated with a different country. And I think because of that, oftentimes, like, even how our peers view us in the streets, like, we don't have the full American identity. Like, people don't actually see us as like citizens of the same status as them because of the fact that maybe our family wasn't in this country for as many generations as the next. But when you said that like Indian food is American food and all of these statements, I started thinking like, wow, like thinking about American history, right? Like there's not really any food that Americans can claim to that is theirs necessarily. Truly, because yeah. of the way that this country was built. Rather than Native Americans, who are the only people who are indigenous to this land, right. the rest of us are immigrants, no matter how many generations. So even when you think about burgers, ribs, steak, all that stuff came from somewhere else, like it even the preparation of those foods. So just as much as that's American food, so is the foods that we're bringing, because we're just another layer of the American story. So that was mm-hmm. really, really well said.
Yeah, I actually it's crazy. Because like you're absolutely right, but I don't think like that. It might be maybe the way that I have been raised, or maybe even the educational system that we have in place. I'm born and raised here, and I still obviously like it's Indian American. It's not just American. And you're absolutely right. I am, while we were talking, I am kind of like questioning in the back of my head. I'm like, wait, yeah, she's absolutely right. Like I mean,
the hyphenated is, it's something that I'm really proud of.
Absolutely.
But I do tell my own community, like, we are all Americans too. Like, we have that right to say that out loud, and we don't always need to hyphenate it. And that's, you know, something when people are always like, where are you from? I'm from New York City. Where, you know, like, where did you grow up? I grew up here. So it's very, like, it's very much, now it's time for us to own that identity along with all of our identities and push it forward.
Yeah, I like that.
And I wanted to know personally, Ashmi, what it was like being, because you said you've been doing this for over a decade now, and that's, to me, that's so amazing, because I was originally thinking, oh, this woman is probably someone who is inspired by ARC and Kamala Harris and all of the people of color who have recently taken leadership, but you've been doing this for years. And I think as a woman of color doing this, you were ahead of your time, or maybe you were, this has been long overdue, to be honest, but I think that I just want to hear more about your experience kind of navigating that in the early 2000s and being probably one of the only ones, I'm sure, who was having these aspirations at such a young age.
I mean, I think, like, for me, when I was growing up, it was very much, like, all the men talked about, like, politics and finance, and all the women didn't, you know, and it felt very exclusionary. And so, for me, it was, like, every time I heard somebody debating or having an opinion and expressing it, it typically was a man, and I was just like, I want to say something, and I didn't hold back. And the cool thing about the way I grew up was, you know, my mom and dad did not have an arranged marriage. They did not follow traditional norms. Like, they dated for 7 years, and that was an anomaly in their generation.
Right.
And so when I grew up in our household, it was very much like, be vocal about yourself and your identity, and it was very much about self-exploration. And I think those values, like, allowed me to experiment in this political space much earlier than most people, I think, in our generation will. I'm afraid that I feel like a lot of millennials and Gen Z will only start thinking about this 10 or 15 years later. And I'm already feeling like the apathy, the skepticism, the, you know, like, why are you doing this right now? Like, is this your time? From people our age. And I'm like, do you see the climate crisis? Do you realize we may not have social security benefits? Like, don't you feel the burden of, like, society on your shoulders every day? And I think the problem has become, like, we have so much, you know, so many crises that we've been affected by, and not enough capacity or mental health care support, or just general, like, direction. And, like, how do you navigate the complexities and the chaos that we hear every day with the media, with the internet? Like, so I think what's happened is we're in this kind of conundrum that we'll slowly work ourselves out of. But I do think it's very difficult to build a campaign like the one we have with all the noise around us, with all the hardship that we've gone through already as a generation. So I'm really trying hard to, like, embed all of our generational values into this and build a progressive movement. But, I mean, it really, like, this vision that we've had for the campaign started many years ago. And it's something that I encourage people to do, is, like, really think about inside, like, your voice. Like, my voice has been guiding this space that I've created for myself. And I think we each want to, just like both of you are doing this, you know, work. It's like, we all have something in us that's telling us, like, maybe we should try this out. Maybe we should just give it, a first step. And that first step for me was, like, volunteering. And then it became being on boards of nonprofits. And then it was, like, being civically active, going on the ground. I mean, I remember the first time I asked someone to fill out a voter registration form on the ground and I hadn't talked to them. Or the first time I picked up the phone and I was like, hey, can you, take a minute of your time to learn about this campaign? And as I started helping many others with their campaigns, I was just thinking, like, I can do this too, and I can do it differently. I think what's really important is, most campaigns are run by consultants. That was something that I learned the first class of campaign management in grad school. And I was just like, no, like, nobody needs to tell us how we need to do this. We can try to just test it ourselves. We have a whole generation of ideas that have not been heard. And so I feel like we're really voiceless in ways. And so if we give people the chance to speak up, maybe we'll find some golden nuggets of wisdom and build something of our own. And so we haven't brought on consultants, and we've been really focused on building something more authentic and real that can sustain a 2-year election cycle and, like, really focus on systemic long-term change. And so that's where, like, the crowdsource model that I'll talk about later, that's the difference, is, like, no other House candidate I know is doing that. And many candidates have come forward to me and said, like, can we use your platform? Can we like, push this and this forward?
I'll tell you, I took AP Gov in high school and I did really well, but it's all gone. So I think that I think one of the other reasons why I'm, like, super excited is because even though it's all gone, I mean, it's not all gone, but, like, a lot of it, a lot of that things that I should know. I mean, I definitely know that it's my civic duty to remain educated. And I think that that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to have you here, because of course we want to talk about your campaign and you doing what you're doing. And like Chinaza said, that, like, it's been a decade, like, it's not just coming up, but I think along with that, there are so many young listeners right now, and there are so many young, just impressionable kids, people. I mean, I consider myself a kid. I'm only 21, Chinaza's 20. Like, we're young kids that still need to be educated, and I think that having these type of conversations are so important because we don't know everything, and because of media, actually. Media doesn't help almost, quite a bit. It's actually, sometimes it has the opposite effect because there's just so much information that you don't know what is the right information. And I think that, definitely, like, whatever you're talking about, like, I think we all really do appreciate you kind of breaking it down a little bit, and even your journey, because who knows? There could be someone else out there listening, planning, in 20 years, they'll be like, we listen to Call Me Whenever podcast.
Well, whoever, yeah, I'm here for you. If you're running for office, I'm here for you to help you. If you want to do leadership, anything, like, I'm here to help. That's my job, right, is, like I said, campaign is a piece of the puzzle. Yes, we need to, like, systemically reform politics on a congressional level, but we also need to, like, encourage. And you mentioned, you're a kid, you're not. Like, I think there's a lot of value to what we have. We just haven't seen it. So we're experiencing, like, massive imposter syndrome, I think, as a generation as well. because we know a lot more than people our age did a generation ago. And that's something to be said about, maybe we're 10 years ahead of our time. Maybe we have a lot more to offer with our perspectives. So what we did on the team was, and it's like kind of like what you mentioned, Shivani, it's, okay, there's, pick an issue that you care about. Let's start with climate, for example. And if climate feels too big, pick, like, one small piece of it. We can do, like, the single-use plastic ban, right? We say, we know that microplastics are all over our oceans. We know that animals are dying from it. We know about the fishing nets from that Seaspiracy Netflix film. Like, we know mainstream culture is now picking up on these things that are going on with climate change. And it's like, where do I start as one person, right? And most people are always like, how do I start making change? And I do agree, yes, you have to volunteer, and yes, you have to be proactive. But I think you really need to understand the system that we live in and how challenging it is to affect change, and how we really need to work within our political systems to enact that change. So it does mean, calling your legislator. It does mean donating to a campaign. It does mean going on the ground and collecting signatures so that people can, because we're in a democracy, right? It means participating in that democracy. So I do think, like, for a lot of people within that space of climate, it's like they might go and clean the ocean for a day and they may volunteer and do that. But we also need them to be working with policy. And so what we did is we asked people to start owning one piece of the puzzle, and that could be a small piece, but it's a huge impact. People have written about, you know, how do we eliminate tax shelters, single-use plastic ban, like menstrual health, you know, free pads and tampons and diapers for all, universal summer school. Like, these ideas, I didn't come up with them. You know, these are people that have been thinking about it. They're like coming up to me. They're saying, you know, I don't know if I'm an expert or not. And I'm like, you are, you know what you're talking about. And we take their research and then we pair them with people that are maybe boomers or, you know, try to do a lot of intergenerational work. And so they can then express their opinions, and that's how we build a crowdsourced platform. We have so much content that's original, and I think that's like the exciting piece is anybody could like go on our site and just say, oh, I want to learn about menstrual health. You know, I don't know how to advocate for it. And that could be like a really good landing page for you.
Yeah, I love how easily you guys have made it to kind of explore those different topics that are so important to our generation and honestly to everyone. Like, I took some time to just explore
The different
resources you had, and I saw it was very straightforward, because I think a lot of politicians try to either be everybody's favorite and kind of stay neutral on a lot of topics to get reelected, or they make it very difficult to have access to the information that they're very passionate about. They kind of save that for protests and save that for like the younger generations to talk about, but oftentimes they don't necessarily take ownership of their opinions. And I think that this, like, your campaign is first of all very grassroots, which is so great that it's really going back to the core of what democracy is about, which is including everybody in the democratic process, including marginalized populations, including young populations that are often told and taught to kind of stay to the side.
Stay back.
This isn't necessarily for your participation, especially sometimes when certain campaigns try to just assume that they have the votes of certain groups just because, and they don't need to actually work to advocate for like why those groups also like could benefit from their policy. So that was just a lot of like, those are my thoughts about how like honestly the democratic process has tended to work until this recently with the new generation of politicians and new generation of, I'll call you guys advocates, because I honestly like sometimes politician has a negative connotation to me now, because oftentimes for me it means superficial, it means kind of just fake, kind
cunning.
Of telling,
I'll put that word out there, cunning. like
cunning, trying to like get people to sign on to something in order to gain political power, and then later not really fulfill any of those promises, and then come back again when re-election comes to then make promises again. And part of that is also because I'm from Nigeria and there's like a lot of corruption there on it, obviously, but also like I think that it's so inspiring to see advocates like you coming out with your opinions and being straightforward and honest about them, and honestly trying to convince and allow people to see that side of why all of these different campaigns that you're fighting for will better democracy and better our society in general. So I think that that's really great.
Thank you. That's so sweet. There's so much work that needs to happen. I think from a candidate side, and I'm happy to talk about this if you want me to, but just like the life of a candidate and how brutal the system can be, and how, like, especially as a first-gen American doing this, it's not, like, we don't have a lot of money, right? Like, I had to quit my job, and then after I quit my job, because I worked at the Federal Reserve, you're not allowed to, like, raise money while you're independent, right? So you have to, like, quit your job because you can't be politically engaged, and then you have to like go raise money. And we started that process like a day after I quit, so it was like, first of all, no break. I've been working on this for years. But then the second piece of it is just like, I found out about a month into the campaign that we don't get paid until the February before the primaries, and you only get paid the salary that you had the year prior. So there are people who are running for office We are spending so much of our own money. I live in New York City in Manhattan in Hell's so Kitchens. And it's like, how do you live in the district that you want to represent, that you grew up in, and do that without a job, without money, right? And I had to work two or three jobs at a time to save and build a safety net. And I spent like a fifth of that safety net in a week on the campaign. And that really hurt because it was just like, how is this sustainable? And how do you stay positive when you have to call hundreds of people every day asking for money, when you just want to be on the ground and knock on doors, but people don't open up?
Yeah.
And it's just like the human nature, right? The human psyche of like what politics has become. Mm-hmm. And so it's like even when there's good intentions and there are new people running, it's so easy for people to just like close the door on you and say, not today, and then continue to complain about the issues that they're experiencing. So I think it's like a two-pronged thing that I'm talking about. Is the first is the way that candidates are treated really creates this vicious cycle of like, we're not going to keep getting new candidates all the time until enough of us are there to reform the system. And we can't even get into that. The few of us that are out there who are putting our whole heart into it, and I know most of them, you know, in this country that are doing this work, we have like these sub-networks that we communicate on, but it's just like, how are we supposed to sustain this effort? You know, I don't have a wealthy husband and I don't have like a lot of privilege. And yeah, I went to Columbia, but I took out $140,000 of debt and I had to pay that off before I could run. I mean, you have to think about like all these things, right? So that's definitely been very like mentally taxing. And I think that's the reality of running, and that people don't really understand that it is a sacrifice and that we don't get paid.
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying and the fact that, like what you were saying earlier about how each and every one of us as citizens do play a role in this overall system and kind of restoring that agency to citizens is so important, because I think that when we close a door on a candidate or when we a smaller candidate or when we consciously or unconsciously kind of in our minds kind of lower other candidates because they don't have this large platform that was probably funded by a bunch of large business corporations who hope that that candidate will run in their best interests mm-hmm. in the future. I don't think that we think about how all of these things are systemic, and even how just listening to a candidate or opening up our options and actually doing our research is serving us in the long run, because I think oftentimes many of us think in the short run, for better or for worse. And that affects our ability to make long-term changes, because those sustainable changes also require sustainable, like, starting points. Like, they require grassroots campaigns, like, honest campaigns that are run by people who genuinely want to make a difference, rather than simply just people who want to stay in office and will do these kind of backdoor deals and work with corporations in order to make that possible. And I think that you're so right in the fact that, like, it can be so frustrating kind of seeing it from your perspective. And recently, I was kind of following this other Nigerian in the community. His name is Junior Isyanu. And he recently ran for a councilman, a smaller position in Texas. And he was able to win. And I think that that was such a big moment, at least in Texas, because I don't think there had ever been a Nigerian councilman in Texas at all. So that was but I was following that campaign. I followed it and I was just like following it for a while. And to see somebody who is so grassroots and so kind of down to earth, just trying to make change, actually be successful, even though not everyone is successful, it's inspiring to see that's possible, because even people running and people participating political tradition, that's the first step.
I think
that the mindset of being afraid to lose is what often holds a lot of, especially immigrant families, potential from even taking that risk.
Like,
we'd rather.
I mean, I've had like a lot of moments. Yeah, I've had a lot of moments where it's like, what are people gonna think? Like, but then it's just like, you have to have 1,000% belief that this will work in whatever way it does. We try our best every day with the resources that we have, and we've been able to raise $100,000 in 3 months. I mean, that's amazing, you know? So it's like, we just have to keep going. I mean, I think that's like the power of faith that I don't think I had as much of, but as I've been doing this, like, I've been tested so much that now anytime somebody, you know, you pick up the phone and they have a bad day, that's on them. Like, that's their character being reflected on me. It's not my character being reflected on them. And I just have to always remember that. And that's what I, you know, a lot of people ask me, they're like, what, how are you able to deal with rejection every day? Because it's constant. But I think it's just remembering, like, that's their person. Like, that's who they are. And this is who I am. And I have to just stick to who I am and keep doing that. So then that's really like finding out your voice inside and saying, like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is my path. If they don't want to donate, that's their money. That's their decision. You know, if they don't want to spend their time on me, that's their time. That's their decision. Right. But if they care, I mean, the weight of that always overweighs like every other thing that happens. So I could have 1,000 rejections, but then one really amazing conversation and you're like, boom, I just did something.
Right.
Right. Even when they see your name, you're like, boom, I just did something.
Right.
Because they saw a different name for the first time. They learned how to pronounce a name.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. And I think it's just so interesting about like talking about like this, the civic duty, because I think a lot of people, like Chinoza said, a lot of people like to complain, you know, like, I mean, I do it too. We all like to complain about like the policies that we have in place or the policies that just don't change because of the backroom deals. And I think that there, it's interesting because, you know, the same the majority of the same people that complain, a lot of them don't act, or they don't get, I don't want to say get educated, but they don't see what's out there, because there are people, like you said, there are people that want things to change, and there are people that are trying to, you know, get things moving. But I think that it's hard, you know, it's hard to make that first $100,000. It's hard to have to start a movement, but it's out there, you know, like there's definitely a person's, like, you know, like, I mean, I was gonna say Georgia, but like that's already, you know, that happened, that happened, but like there's someone in Tennessee, you know, that's really planning and doing things, and they have a lot of great ideas, but they just need to, they need that mental and financial support sometimes, you know. So it's interesting to see that aspect. I mean, I we're both in Jersey, so I think we're also lucky in the sense that, you know, a lot of what our beliefs are, they kind of, we're not in a, in an area where the opposite happens, you know. So, but a lot of areas in the country, there doesn't mean that they're all predominantly having the same beliefs. It's just that they need that support to get their ideas going.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that the belief that you were talking about earlier, Ashmi, that small tokens of success don't equate to actual change. Like, I think there's a lot of political apathy, honestly, in this country, even though in this last election we've seen kind of everyone crowd together and really a lot of coalitions to like vote the former president out and to like usher in a new president. And that was amazing to see so many underrepresented groups kind of taking responsibility of that civic duty. But I still think that that was almost, it felt to me personally like an emergency situation rather than the new current trend of how politics was going to take place. Because after the November 6th, 2020 elections, then for whatever elections were coming up, I'm sure like voter turnout was down again. And those exactly, it would nosedive. And I think that that's still a problem, because I think that those were very short-term solutions. But I wonder if you have any thoughts on how we can kind of work to make sure that youth are involved and stay involved in politics, like in a more accessible way.
Yeah.
Because I think that with the youth, we have the media, we have all of these different resources to stay aware and stay involved. But oftentimes we act like we don't have those resources available to us, or we still vote in a similar way to our parents, which is whether that's not voting at all or voting for like the biggest candidate, rather than taking, even if it's just 15 minutes to do the research of who these people are and kind of gain our own opinions. We kind of just follow the status quo. And I just want to know whether you had any ideas on how we can grow from that, especially as someone so politically involved.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the model, that's a great question, is just starting with like internal reflection. So like literally put your phone and your laptop away and spend 5 minutes and just get a piece of paper and a pencil and say, like, what are things that are important to you? You know, for me, if I write it down, it's honestly everything. But I mean, what affected me in the beginning was gender equality, right? It was like, oh, these men are talking about these things that I want to talk about. And so what did I do? I studied like finance and policy, right? I wanted to be able to earn that respect and have that conversation and knowledge. Now, what was something else that was important to me? Climate change, right? There's just like so much. Like every time I see plastic at Starbucks, like just like the amount of cups, you know, at productions, it's like it takes 2,000 years for that plastic to decompose for one fork, right? So it's, we have so much work ahead of us. And what I want people to do is isolate the noise and write out a few things that you care about. And then figure out how you can get up outside, go outside to a different person who may be organizing an event, who may be like actionally, like having, doing something like action related. So it could be like registering a voter. When my brother registered a voter for the first time, I mean, the feeling that he got, it's priceless, right? So it's knocking on a door. It's just being a part of this democracy that we live in. Because I'm really worried that, you know, when you like something on Instagram, it does not translate into change. It builds awareness for our generation, but it is an echo chamber, and we really need to like take ourselves out of that and go outside and talk to people every day and register our communities to vote. You know, I was at a taxi depot to like over the weekend, and I met a bunch of taxi drivers at JFK Airport, and we just registered all of them.
Oh, that's, you know, wonderful news.
And that's all it takes. It's very easy stuff. It's just the process of just getting up and talking to someone, I think, is the hardest part. But people are receptive, and they want to know what, they're curious. They're like, why is this random person walking towards me?
Right. Especially now that, you know, everyone, hopefully you guys all should be vaccinated. But
yeah,
especially exactly. Now that everyone is vaccinated, everyone's out, everyone wants to have a conversation. But I do want to ask, because I do see even the younger generation. I know I'm technically Gen Z, but I consider myself neither millennial or Gen Z, because we're in that,
I thought you considered yourself in the middle space. Shivani,
yeah, like we're in like that gray space of like we're not like 2000. I don't know. Yeah, we're in the good years. But I will say, like, looking at the younger Gen Z and, you know, seeing them grow up, not a concern, but something that I do see is that I don't see them going out. I don't see that happening, you know, and I think that, of course, we should. But how do you see, like, do you see a change in, like, I guess what I'm asking is, how do you translate that to being in front of your phone 24/7? Because you're absolutely right. Put your phone down. Go down the street, talk to your neighbor. I completely agree with that. But for the younger generation,
how are we gonna get them to do
it? How are we gonna get them?
With TikTok, Instagram, all of these other things.
Right.
Where I think a lot of the thought processes, I can get that information on my phone with everything.
I feel like organizing needs to be cool again, and it kind of is getting into that space of like I think people thought it was really cool to volunteer for AOC's campaign. But I think it's the whole idea of, like, this is a long-term commitment for the rest of your life. And, I mean, I think it starts with, for us, like, just having a year of service in between high school and college, mandating student service learning and volunteer hours in college. Because you have them in certain neighborhoods in counties in high school, wow. But it's, like, what happens to civic volunteerism and engagement? I mean, those are areas that, like, from an education lens, we could definitely improve. It's just like requiring students to be engaged and volunteer in their communities. But I think in terms of just like when they see a candidate that they believe in, they will gravitate. And I've already felt that. I mean, we have high schoolers and, you know, people of all ages that are like, Ashmi, I want to work on your campaign. I want to intern. I will say, like, for most people, when they don't know how to start, it usually starts with like a Google search, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like, if they don't know what to look up, it becomes very difficult. But I will tell anybody who's listening, like, if you want to volunteer on a campaign, it's pretty possible that you can do that. You know, some of these are unpaid opportunities. They're amazing learning experiences, especially when you're young. And so it could be a resume builder. It can help you expand your knowledge. It can expand your network. And so if that's what motivates someone to do the work, like, do what motivates
it
you.
It will.
You know?
The second you said resume builder, as a fellow, both of us actually, as fellow young women that were really just looking for anything to put on our
you want to like spend your time doing something meaningful while also like learning and not just wasting your whole day in the summer, right? Like you want to do something productive with your life. I think internships really help with finding purpose. I mean, our interns are incredible. All of our people are under 30, and it's like we're building it. You know, we raised 100,000, so it's like it's doable. It is definitely like a lot of work in terms of my end to train, to bring in the resources and the experts to teach us. But we can do it. You know, we're doing it.
And no, I love that. I really loved what you said about like the fact that young people, like there's imposter syndrome when it comes to politics. And partially I think that that is on the responsibility of the education system to do a better job of making us feel like we have a hand to play in politics and government. And it's not just some far away building where people are making these decisions and it's all for our best interests. So like we should all just kind of participate in the politics but not be too involved in our own ideas, rather just attach ourselves to a party member rather than acknowledging ourselves as dynamic individuals with ideas on probably like many different spectrums, and to focus on each of those issues. Oftentimes I think that it allows people to it tells people to pigeonhole themselves into a party and then like just pick what like the different candidates that are churning out, which I think can be very harmful at times because it makes people not critically think about every single decision that's being made and rather just attach themselves to it already, whatever a certain party or a certain candidate is preaching, just to attach themselves and be like, yep, I believe that, check, I guess I'll believe that. Like even when I was in middle school, I remember like going through that kind of just like not really knowing sure really what my beliefs were, because oftentimes it's so easy to just group think and just do that. But I really love how, and I think it's scary for a lot of people who are so used to the current way things are run, seeing all these youth like be involved in all these different issues. And I think the first response is to gaslight and be like, you guys don't know what you're talking about, like this is so much deeper than you think.
Someone like laugh at me, like, you're running against Jerry Nadler, and then he laughed, and he's like, why? And I was like, because this is a democracy, you know? Yes. Like, we have that right. And so I think, and for me, what I've learned is, like, that quick response time, too. I think we all need to, like, learn that muscle of not only should we, like you said so well, you know, identify the pieces that we care about, isolate the noise, and then figure out who's doing that work and how can we, like, start learning what that work looks like, because this work is very easy. You know, it's just it's talking to people. It's mobilizing them. It's not like it does not require a degree. It just requires like human connection. But when, you know, it's also the muscle of like responding to things as they're happening, not through social media, but in dialogue with people. And so that's also been a big lesson that I've learned on the campaign, is just like when people say things like that to me, like, can I just say something right back and not hold it in, you know?
Yeah.
So anytime someone laughs at me tries to put me down, someone said I look like I was 12. You know, I mean, really, what did that do for us right now? What was that? Was that necessary? So, yeah.
I love that. And briefly, because we did talk about, you know, you raising money, like we will include the link in the bio, guys, but definitely consider like donating to the campaign. It's just a click of a button, and then it's so easy, like literally. And if your phone or computer remembers your credit card information, it literally takes 30 seconds.
Thank you, Shivani, for doing that. Seriously.
No, of course.
Please support Ashmi. And we have a tradition on Coronator Podcast where we sing a song relating to the topic.
By we, she means she.
Sometimes, Shivani, you join in.
If it's a good one. If it's a good song.
I don't think you're going to join in on this song because you don't even know it. But I'm a
history. I don't know if I'll know it. I'm telling you that.
I don't know if you watched Liberty's Kids growing up. It was this show on this random channel for kids that I don't even think exists anymore because this was like 2004. But I've always been fascinated with history. I'm a history concentrator, actually. I love history. And even I think I took an American history class last year just about the American Revolution. And I was shocked by how much I didn't know. like how much of my information had been informed by just kind of this like patriotism that wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. close to the truth of how things happened. Like, but then, you know, I rewatched actually, and I'm in the process of rewatching this show and with this informed knowledge of like all these primary resources that I've watched and new information about how things went, I go back to this show and I realize how nuanced it was, because it did show a lot of those things. I just ignored them or forgot them when I got to elementary school, but it talked about slavery in a more dynamic way. It talked about mm-hmm. the global perspective of the American Revolution and what it actually looked like and how people perceived it, which I think that, you know, as Americans, we're just inclined to think like, oh, America, those are the good guys, everyone else is the bad guys, without actually thinking critically about humanity and what it looked like from each perspective. So mm-hmm. I really love this show because I think that it actually was ahead of its time in terms of showing those diverse perspectives, even though, of course, it might have been a little nationalistic. So I'm going to sing it. I need you to sing this. I'm not going to sing the whole thing. I'm probably going to sing like the chorus, but it goes, I see a land with liberty for all.
Aww.
Yet still I know the truth will rise and fall. Ooh, yeah, yeah, that's just the way it goes. A word not to the wise. The world is made to change. Each day is a surprise. I'm looking at life through my own eyes. And then it goes on and on. And it just talks about looking at life through their own eyes. But yeah, that's the song. I really struggled to think of a song for this episode because I was like, they're all
I loved it.
patriotic. But yeah.
This world is made to change. I think that was one of the lyrics, if I remember correctly.
I knew that was the one you'd like.
I did it. But yes, I think that's a perfect note to end this episode on, guys. Again, Ashmi. I know your Instagram is literally Ashmi Sheth, guys, so we'll put everything in the bio, but if you guys are listening and you are on your phones, it's A-S-H-M-I-S-H-E-T-H. We'll link her website, which is ashmiforcongress.org.
.com.
So check those out. And
Are there any other things you'd like to plug, Ashmi, while you're here? Is there any other, like, are you on Twitter? Are there any other platforms?
I am on Twitter. It's AshmiSheth1. I tried to do that because it's, like, W-O-N and O-N-E. Yeah.
I like it.
Just like, but, you know, if you're interested in getting an internship, if you want to volunteer, and this is the first step, and I'm the first person you're talking, you know, listening to about politics, like, do it. Just email me. We have an amazing team. It's a learning opportunity. And, you know, I'm lucky to have you there. So I think it's just really important for you to feel appreciated and seen. And we'll make sure that happens. And then the other part is, if you have $1 or $2, like, just donate it if you can. It helps us show that we have people power. To me, that's the most important metric. We raised over 100,000, but what's important to me is 533 people gave the 100,000. That is far more than AOC, Bowman, all these people who were first starting out by the hundreds. And so it's like, let's look at the trajectory of where yes. this is going. The progressive movement is building, and we just need to like fight and donate and make sure our voices are seen and heard. So whichever way you can help, please, I need you there. So thank you so much to both of you for bringing me on.
Of course. Yes. Fight and donate, guys.
I don't know about you. I will fight be donating right after this.
Fight. That should be your slogan. Fight and donate. I don't know if it is or not, but I like that.
Shivani's and hopefully we can all see each other in person. You know, I'm right across the river. So let me know when you're here. And we'll need your help getting signatures, too.
Most definitely.
Shivani, I promise you, Shivani is great at that. She's very aggressive. So,
no, most definitely. She'll get you those signatures. Yes. And just to wrap it up, you guys already know to follow us on Call Me Whenever Podcast on Instagram. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. We're on all platforms. Feel free to shoot us an email if you have any suggestions or if you like something or you didn't like something. Let's open up the conversation. And as always,
call us whenever. Bye, guys. Love you.